It's Free Talk Live. Phones are open. You can join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, you've got me, Ian.
Me, Bonnie.
And Chris.
And, of course, you can bring up anything. That is the point of the program here. And the number is 603-283-6160. We've got lots, of course, in the news to discuss tonight. Bonnie's got a story on the way about a different newspaper, because we already covered one of them that happened, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago or something like that.
Yeah, a German newspaper called Bild.
Yeah, which was like the largest newspaper in Germany or something.
Yeah.
Now another biggie, apparently, over in Denmark, I believe.
Yeah.
Has come out and apologized to their readers for just basically taking the government's word for things when it comes to COVID-19. We can tell you about that. Of course, the phones are open and there's a lot in the news to discuss. Plus, Bonnie, you're going to actually open us up here tonight with not exactly the headline that I think we were expecting. So there was a news recently that Biden is planning on issuing an executive order within the next few weeks. So the story that you're going to be talking about here is not that story. This is something else. So Biden is going to be coming out with an executive order about cryptocurrency, apparently within the next 2 or 3 weeks. There's not much being said about what that's going to mean. They're just teasing it that it's going to happen. But this is something else. This is a bill that someone has put forward. And normally, I don't like to speculate on what bills are going to pass and what, you know, isn't. Maybe this thing is going to go down in flames. We have no idea, but it definitely caught our attention. So what's going on?
This from Bitcoin.com says, U.S. unveils bill giving Treasury Secretary unchecked and unilateral power to ban crypto transactions, advocate warns. A new bill introduced in the U.S. has a provision that would essentially give the Treasury Secretary unchecked, and that is Janet Yellen, right?
Yeah, she's scary looking.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Unchecked in unilateral power to ban cryptocurrency transactions, warned crypto advocacy organization Coin Center. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen will be able to prohibit any crypto transactions without any process, rulemaking, or limitation on the duration of the process. I don't see how she has the ability to do that.
I mean, how would she have the legal authority to do that? Isn't there don't we have like certain constitutional rights? Like, wouldn't that inhibit some of this? Like,
you would think.
I mean, I don't know what specific right it would be, but like, I mean, liberty maybe would be the maybe what part of that?
The right to seek happiness.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so again, this is they're talking about a piece of legislation. This hasn't passed. Somebody just introduced a bill. It may not pass. It may not even come close to passing. So it's one of those things where there was something like this last year where there was some kind of, I guess, regulations going into the infrastructure bill, and the crypto people were freaking out about
it. They did go in.
Yeah, I think they did. Yeah. Oh, call your congressman. And they spent all this time and this money trying to change this situation, and they didn't have any effect on it whatsoever. And it's like, that's not how crypto is supposed to work. Crypto is about ignoring the state. Crypto is about creating something that is an alternative and not begging the state to give you permission to do something. And so here we go again. They're going to once again put the call out. Oh, God, we got to stop this bill. And the fact is, Janet Yellen, or whoever it is that is in charge of whatever treasury or whatever bureaucracy we're talking about, they can't stop. I guess they can ban it, but they can't stop it. They can't stop crypto.
You know what it comes down to is it gives them the authority to basically oppress a certain group that likes a certain thing. That's what it does. It's not, you know, they can't stop it from occurring, but they can certainly target people for it.
Hmm.
That's what they did with the Crypto 6.
Yep.
You can go to thecrypto6.com when they raided this house and our co-hosts' houses and friends all simultaneously on March 16th of last year. So learn more about that, and that is just straight up a political attack, from what I can tell. So the whole point that I wanted to make on this is that Yellen cannot stop cryptocurrency. They can prohibit the transactions. They can pass a law that says, oh, this bureaucrat can tell you you're not allowed to do that. Well, they can't actually stop you from doing it. So that's the nice thing about cryptocurrency is there's no middleman. There's no central authority for the most part. There are some cryptos that are not really that crypto, I guess we could say.
Most stable coins.
A lot of the stable coins, they can actually reverse transactions and things like that. So look out. So be wary of that. But Bitcoin Cash, Dash, some of these, you know, standard kind of cryptocurrency cryptos, they cannot be stopped. As long as you've got a cryptocurrency wallet and you're in control of your keys, no one can tell you you can't and send a transaction.
It's interesting because it's even more so with things like Monero, right, and Zcash. It adds a layer of anonymity and privacy to your transaction.
Oh, and they hate
so,
that.
Yeah, they really they hate that.
Yeah, they cannot stop that.
I mean, it's
ridiculous.
It's interesting because Bitcoin kind of gave us control, and then the next generation of cryptos kind of gave us privacy and anonymity, and they're still trying to deal with the control. How do we take back control? How does the U.S. government, or how do governments anywhere, you know, take control over it? And they just can't.
Yeah, they can't.
They're failing at it.
They can't. They don't know what to do about the fact that they can't do anything.
Right.
That's really frustrating to them. Now, what they can do, and they will do, is regulate the central exchanges.
Sure.
Because those are easy. They know where they are. They have a location. There's an office somewhere.
They're already registered with the federal government.
They're registered with the government. They're sending them paperwork.
I mean, it's interesting because that only works to a certain degree, right? Like, at a certain point, people have it, and there's enough people who have it that it does. You don't need an exchange, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, unlike...
That's why sites like Local Bitcoins were created.
And one of the things I think they're afraid of is that, unlike traditional fiat, you need a central entity, right? If I want to do a wire transfer, or I want to send money to somebody, or I get cash at the end of the day, I need to go and take it to a bank for security reasons. Mm-hmm. You don't need that with cryptocurrencies. You know, you put a password on your device, and, you know, I mean, short of somebody putting a gun to your head, it's pretty secure.
Yeah. What else do we need to know? Is there anything else?
Jerry Brito, executive director of Coin Center, a DC-based think tank focused on the public policy issues facing cryptocurrencies, warned about the America Competes Act of 2022. And whenever they reference the name of the bill, they put Competes in all caps, so that's the
name
of the bill.
Probably stands for something.
Yeah. In a series of tweets Wednesday. The bill was introduced in the House of Representatives on Tuesday. Noting that the America Competes Act of 2022, quote, will very likely pass in some form, Brito explained that it contains the, quote, special measures provision proposed by Connecticut Congressman Jim Himes that would be disastrous, not just for cryptocurrency, but for privacy and due process generally. He continued, the so-called special measures provision would essentially give the Treasury Secretary unchecked and unilateral power to ban exchanges and other financial institutions from engaging in cryptocurrency transactions.
So it sounds like they want to limit competition.
By the way, I looked it up here. I pulled the bill up. It's 2,912 pages in length.
How is anybody supposed to comply?
No one could read this.
How is anybody supposed to comply with like the law, let alone
one of here's what it stands for: America, creating opportunities for manufacturing preeminence in technology and economic strength Act of 2022.
And that's such BS, because any company or country that bans cryptocurrency is going to automatically be behind any country that keeps it legal and able to thrive in that country.
Yeah. Well, that's how they do these things, right? Like the Patriot Act.
Hmm.
Oh, who's against patriots? Patriotism. We gotta pass the Patriot Act. Oh, who's against creating opportunities for manufacturing, et cetera, et cetera? It sounds very positive, but what they're actually doing here is they're going to destroy opportunity if they tell businesses they're not allowed to do business with cryptocurrency. Because even though they can not stop cryptocurrency transactions, they can really put a dampener on the industry by basically telling businesses, we're going to put you in a cage if you do this.
Yeah.
Because businesses are operating publicly. You can walk into the store, and obviously they're not going to want to get arrested for doing their business.
They're constantly pushing more and more businesses into the black market, though. So, I don't know. If you go too far, eventually people will just stop complying.
We got more coming up. You can join us and take control of the airwaves. Free Talk Live. Is Free Talk Live, and you can bring up whatever you want. The number is 603-283-6160. at 603-283-6160. You can take control of the airwaves here. It's Ian, Bonnie, and Chris. And we're raising funds for Give Directly. It is the first nonprofit that allows you to give money directly to people living in extreme poverty. And they locate recipients who are in need in places where it is not fun to live, like Bemet and Kilifi counties in Kenya, where some people have to walk for miles just to get some potable water. You can go to give.freetalklive.com and help these people out. We're going to double the money by matching your donations up to a total of $30,000. And in the last decade, Give Directly has delivered over $400 million to over a million people. Research shows giving cash to people in poverty can drive a range of important positive changes in their lives, like employment, nutrition, health, and education. Plus, cash allows individuals to invest in what they need instead of relying on aid, organizations, and donors thousands of miles away to choose for them. So if you agree with that sort of help, then you can go to give.freetalklive.com and help out there. That's give.freetalklive.com. And yes, they do accept cryptocurrency, because as of now, as much as they talk about it, cryptocurrency is not banned in the United States. But did they just ban it in Russia? I remember seeing some kind of headlines about that.
Yeah, I thought they did do something in Russia, but I don't know.
I thought they did too, because everybody was saying, oh, crypto is falling in price because Russia banned it.
There's a story today that makes me think maybe they didn't ban it.
Hmm. But okay, so it was the Russian central bank that was pushing to ban crypto.
Okay. So they haven't actually done it.
But it has not yet. Yeah, it has not yet gone through. And now Putin is apparently pushing back against him. And you've got a story about that. So let's get into it, shall we?
Okay.
Again, the number, if you want to join us, 603-283-6160. The Central Bank of Russia, the CBR, had issued a report summarizing its position on digital assets. And this, according to Cointelegraph.com, proposed a ban on any crypto trading and mining operations in the country. So they were talking about just a straight-up ban on all cryptocurrencies. So what else did you find out?
So the story I have here is, ban less likely? Putin says crypto mining has its advantages in Russia. So is he promoting it? Putin says that a surplus of electricity and well-trained personnel give Russia a competitive advantage in crypto mining. I could see that too. I mean, they have like really remote areas where they probably have electricity
cheap
generation that isn't being utilized because, you know, those towns don't exist anymore, or they're basically, you know, I mean, the populations have declined because, you know, maybe they were mining towns or, you know, similar. And if your population goes down and you have the surplus of electricity that you're generating anyway, it's going to be cheap.
You got to use it.
Yeah. You got to use it, or you lose it.
Right.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has given crypto enthusiasts a glimmer of hope for the future of digital assets in the country, which have been under threat from the recent push to ban cryptocurrencies and mining. Yeah, and you know, I've said this before. I think this is like there's a really strong case for Putin to and Russia to be in favor of cryptocurrencies, especially when you have foreign governments trying to are threatening them. The U.S. government has been threatening them with
tariffs.
Taking away SWIFT, basically. SWIFT is a...
international wiring.
Yeah, international wire transfers. And that's how a lot of stuff gets paid, you know, when you do trade internationally, right? So if they take that away, well, how are they going to trade with other countries?
That's bad.
Are they going to go back to trading gold or something? I mean, cryptocurrencies, probably the market isn't there, but if Russia started using it, it would also boost demand and it would... Yeah, I mean, potentially, it has the potential.
If there were a country as large as Russia that actually started doing international cross-border transactions with some sort of cryptocurrency, that would start an avalanche, I think, of change.
I honestly hope the United States, you know, goes after Russia using SWIFT, because I think they
would force them.
Force them into a situation that would benefit everybody around the world. The strongman leader opened a Wednesday video conference with members of the Russian government by saying he would like to start with an issue that is currently in the spotlight, the regulation of cryptocurrencies. Of course, we have we also have certain competitive advantages here, especially in the so-called mining. I mean, the surplus of electricity, again, this is a key word, surplus, mm-hmm. meaning you're generating more than you're actually using.
Right.
I mean, the surplus of electricity and the well-trained personnel available in the country. According to analysts, in spring of 2021, the price of electricity in Russia was 0.06 kilowatts an hour for household use and 8 cents for businesses. To compare, in France, 1 kilowatt of electricity costs 20 cents.
Wow. I think it's like 14 or 15 cents in New Hampshire, isn't it?
I'm not sure. Yeah. But it's
expensive
not,
here.
It's definitely not a place where you'd want to mine usually.
Right. But he's saying it's a fraction of that over there.
Right.
That's amazing.
Right. Right. Let's see here. 1 kilowatt electricity is 20 cents for households and 14 cents for businesses. Wait, what?
That's, yeah. Well, and you know what? If you're buying their surplus, you could probably get a discount.
That's interesting. That's what I would think, but usually it's the other way around. That's actually interesting. If they're just not writing this incorrectly, France actually does what makes the most sense. It's giving you a discount for surplus, mm-hmm. but usually, I'm sorry, not surplus, but they give you a discount for most. Usually, businesses they charge more for electricity.
That's what they said
in most places.
The Russian businesses were 8 cents.
Right, that's true in Russia, but in France they're saying the opposite. Hmm. It's cheaper for businesses than it is for householders.
Wow, that's interesting.
Hmm.
Well, they have a lot of, I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but they have a lot of nuclear energy, so I've heard that...
That's right, in France they do, you're right.
Energy is really cheap, I mean, is more cheap there, so...
It should be.
Hmm. Yeah. So this is interesting. So he's actually calling on the central bank to come to meet with the government and come to a consensus on the use of crypto. This sounds like so if people have to understand, Russia is basically like a dictatorship. Sounds like the central bank is going to have to turn around on what they're saying.
That's why I was kind of wondering about. I was like, if Vladimir Putin is saying something, isn't it just law? Because isn't he basically a dictator?
And he's the quote-unquote president, but it may be one of those things where you don't want to run against him or else kind of situation.
That's my understanding of it is you don't want to challenge him because, you know, people end up dead.
Yeah.
Or in cages or, you know, whatever, you know. Let's see. Last Thursday, Russia's central bank published a report proposing a blanket ban on domestic crypto. So this is what we were saying before. Crypto trading and mining. Maybe the trading would make sense, but why would they? I don't understand why a country would ban mining. Like especially a country that is
it's because they're threatened by
economic sanctions, though, against them.
Well, I get what you're saying, but all central banks are concerned with the central bank, right? Like they're concerned not with the whole of Russia or whatever other the government is doing. They're concerned with their bureaucracy.
Yeah, they don't really care about what is in the people's interest or what's even in the government's interest. They care about what's in their interest
as far as...
They want to
keep the central bank going.
Right.
And they know that cryptocurrency is a threat to that status quo. We'll continue. There sounds like there's more to the story here. We'll find out what the central bank there is demanding. And the number is, if you want to join us, 603-283-6160, you can take control of the airwaves here on Free Talk Live.
Looking for a great real estate investment? Consider New Hampshire, which is ground zero for the Liberty Movement. Your first call should be to Mark Warden from Porcupine Real Estate. He's more than just a real estate agent. He's your New Hampshire concierge. Where are the best places to live? Do you want farm, city, the burbs, or forest? Do you want a duplex or multifamily building so that renters pay your mortgage? There are homes in all price ranges in New Hampshire, and Mark can help with financing, too. Invest in liberty and property. Mark Warden can help.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.
Free Talk Live, phones are open. You can join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. I want to say thanks to Eli123KY, who is a supporter of the Free Talk Live AMPS program. You can join AMPS by going to amps.freetalklive.com. That'll take you right over to our Patreon. We launched one of these Patreons a few months ago, and thanks to the over 70 people who have since made the transition over, because we used to have the AMP program, and then our credit card company decided they didn't want to do business with us anymore. It might have to do with the FBI raid. I don't know. They didn't say. but they broke up with us, and at the same time, our website was having some trouble, so I blew up the old site. We launched a new one, and at the same time launched this Patreon. So thank you, Eli123KY, for helping us out over there and becoming a silver supporter of AMPS. AMPS.freetalklive.com. So, Chris, you're telling us about the Russian government gang, and there's a bit of disagreement within the gang. Apparently, there's the central bank that had come out with some sort of a report that said they were wanting to completely prohibit Bitcoin mining or any crypto mining, and also exchanges. And so now Putin is pushing back against that, saying not so fast.
Yeah, basically the Russian central bank just published a report proposing a blanket ban on domestic crypto trading and mining. The report states that the risks of crypto are much higher for emerging markets, including Russia. Okay, I have to laugh at that. Emerging, they're considering Russia an emerging market.
Power.
Right. Aren't they like number two in the world? Like it was the United States versus the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. I mean, to call them a emerging market just sounds insane. Russia's central bank has had concerns regarding crypto for some time now. In December of 2021, the Central Bank of Russia Governor Elvira Nabiulina said, I'm going to butcher these names. I always do. We cannot welcome investments into cryptocurrency. So, on Wednesday, Russian Finance Minister Ivan Chebeskov responded with opposition to the proposed blanket ban, calling for regulation rather than restriction. He highlighted that a ban on crypto would cause the country to fall behind the worldwide tech industry. Wouldn't regulation do the same thing, though? I mean,
of course.
Aren't you gonna push the technological innovation, out or to some other country that doesn't have as restrictive regulations?
Of course, but they don't see it that way.
No, I mean they don't, but like they should. I mean,
yeah.
I mean.
It's the truth.
I mean, this kind of reminds me of like the New Hampshire advantage, in some ways, because it's like if you make it harder for people to do business in one state, then they're going to move to another. And certainly it's helped New Hampshire.
Well, they don't care.
And this is sort of a similar type of situation.
They don't care how much it helps the people. They want to make sure they get all the cuts that they think they deserve.
So I did check, by the way, on Russia as far as what's their economy like. The visualcapitalist.com has a handy little, I guess, global kind of diagram of which countries are what size and what's their total amount of GDP. Russia is $1.65 trillion. So it is in the trillions category. It's that big, but it is still not, I don't know. I don't have like a ranking here. I'm just looking at relative size. So it's smaller than France, Italy, UK, Germany. Of course, China and the US are huge. India, Japan, South Korea even. It's not the biggest in the world, but it's probably in the top 20 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know how those numbers are entirely figured out. But like, one of these things where
they probably get them from the government.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, I'm sure that's probably true. But one of the things that I always kind of think about is like, okay, well, how big is Russia? Russia
humongous.
Not in terms of land mass, but in terms of population. And if you look at like the resources of Russia, Russia has a lot, significantly. They have a significant amount of resources in terms of like raw materials and things like that, right? Oil. I'm not even sure what else, but like mining, that kind of thing, right?
It's 144 million people.
Yeah. So
I mean, that's no slouch.
It's like half it's smaller than half the size of the United States. So like a lot of that you kind of have to take into consideration. And a lot of the countries in Europe actually have some pretty they're small countries and they have some pretty significant population sizes. The United Kingdom, which is like an island, I think is like 60 million people. So I mean, just to keep things,
Japan is 125 million.
Right. So, it's if you're comparing GDP, I would expect a country like the United States to be substantially larger in GDP than say the United Kingdom or say Russia. It doesn't necessarily mean that Russia is in poverty, but no. At the same time, I think there might be other factors going in there too. Like, okay, well, if your government is spending all your money on, like weapons and things, that I don't know if that has an impact on the GDP, but it very well might. So if they're spending disproportionately, you know, on weapons, then it also might make sense. Where that doesn't necessarily mean they would be wealthier if they didn't do some of what they did.
Is there more we need to know from this story?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let's see here. Yeah, one last thing, I guess. Putin conceded that expanding the use of crypto carries certain risks, given its high volatility. Well, you know what's interesting about that is I hear that there is I hate to call it a stable coin, but a true, apparently, cryptocurrency that is a stable coin that has been forked from Monero, and I don't really know anything about it at this point.
Haven, is that what it's called?
Believe so, yeah. Which kind of begs the question, where is crypto going to go if there's actually something that is really a cryptocurrency and it has more stability to it? All those concerns that people have, all the criticisms that people have about cryptocurrencies, they kind of go out the window.
Yeah, because that would be so permissionless. It's supposed to be a decentralized exchange that sells...
Maybe you guys know more about it than I do.
I know a little bit about it. I'm not allowed to use crypto, but I'm still following it closely because I'm fascinated by these developments.
You're not prohibited from having a newspaper.
Correct. Well, they don't cover this stuff in the newspapers, but I can go to news.bitcoin.com and read about stuff.
Sure.
So it's interesting. They have these algorithmic stablecoins. We actually touched on these last night on the air, and this one that you're talking about, the Monero fork called Haven, is one of these algorithmic stablecoins. Now, it's nowhere near even the top 100. It's a pretty new crypto from what I understand. So, it's like a lot of these things, completely speculative. Who knows? This thing could be a scam from top to bottom. It could be something that just fizzles out, or it could be something that all of a sudden shoots up the charts and takes the world by storm. But the thing is, Monero itself, the original kind of number one privacy coin, it's not really like setting the world on fire, because it doesn't seem like people at this point really value privacy. That's why I don't think it's taken off.
It's a little harder to get like actual Monero that isn't tracked. People don't want to jump through that.
I mean, maybe, but when there's a will, there's a way. If you want to get Monero, you're going to find out that there are online websites that you don't have to even sign up for, that you can just send some Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash or whatever into these sites, and they send you back the Monero. I don't know which ones are the best, but I know that they exist.
It's interesting because in some respects, I feel like some of the arguments against cryptocurrency, they're not entirely wrong about, I think this is kind of a good example of this. Like, I think cryptocurrency has a ton of value. But most of the people
about $1 trillion at least right now.
Sure. But most of the people who are I don't want to say using it, but people who have it, let's put it that way, right? Mm-hmm. They're not using it in the way that it's really intended. At least not the way Bitcoin was originally intended.
Bitcoin was intended as peer-to-peer cash.
Right, right. And I think there is some fair criticism there.
Absolutely.
In that same respect, it kind of overlooks the fact that there's nothing stopping us from having a more stable, something that would be agreeable to them as far as cryptocurrencies are concerned. And it's Haven sounds like it could be that.
We could continue here. Your calls and thoughts are welcome, and share whatever is on your mind. Plus, is crypto a giant Ponzi scheme? There's yet another claim about that. Yep, it's Free Talk Live. Phones are open. You can join us and take control of the airwaves. The number is 603-283-6160. Coming up, a Danish newspaper is apologizing to their readers, and we'll tell you what that's all about. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And Chris.
We're going to go to your phone calls and thoughts. And then coming up, we'll talk a little bit more about cryptocurrency, since that's where we started tonight. And honestly, it is, in my opinion, one of the most important things out there on the planet, to bring more freedom to the world. And, of course, the governments of the world have finally figured that out. At first, they just, you know, ignored it, and then they laughed at it. And now they are fighting it. Now they have figured out that this thing is a threat. It has been let go too far without any kind of regulations, and they're going to try to crack down on it now.
It's too late.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with you on that, Bonnie, but that doesn't mean they're not going to fight and claw and attack and kill and harm as many people as they possibly can as they go down into the tar pits of history. So we go on, though, with your calls and thoughts. First up, he is Mehdi, calling us from Canada. Mehdi, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, how's it going? Hey. Ian, Bonnie, and Chris, hi.
Thanks,
hey.
Mehdi. What's on your mind,
man?
So I'm going to Ottawa right now, actually, driving. I was going to tell you guys, I don't know how if the audience knows too much about this because it's a Canadian thing, really. What the government, the federal government, was going to do is mandate truckers, if they cross the international border, so from going to the U.S., mm-hmm. coming back to Canada, if they're not vaccinated, they would have to isolate themselves for 14 days before they can pick up loads and do anything else, which would basically mean their money is gone, right? Like, they're going to have to quit jobs and stuff for those 14 days. It started as that, and then now it's become more of a... And to get rid of mandates for a lot of things, which is good. Mandated vaccines, mandate QR codes. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but in Canada, to go into a restaurant, movie theater, lots of indoor spaces, you actually have this vaccine passport.
Oh my God. Is it the whole of Canada? Is it every province, every territory?
Oh, is it the whole of Canada? I'm pretty sure. I don't want to be quoted on that. It could be a Google thing you could see. For sure it's in BC, Quebec, Ontario, Alberta.
Okay.
So I know it's all the biggies. In a bunch, but I technically don't know if it's a federal thing that they have.
Okay.
That they're imposing on the businesses. That's a bit concerning, at least for me, because it kind of is a... So basically, it's a QR code, and you have to show ID. I don't know if you guys know this, but you have to show your driver's license to show that you're that person, and you have a piece of paper, or it's on your phone, that has a QR code.
That's exactly what they've been doing in major cities in the United States as well.
Have they?
Yeah, New York City, Chicago... Boston, I believe, just put that into play very recently. San Francisco.
And what happens
New
if
Orleans,
you don't have one of these QR codes?
You don't get to go in to do things. They won't let you in.
You can't go in. You're not allowed in.
Wow.
You didn't know that, Chris?
Yeah, now they do.
No.
Yeah. No, that started back in, I think New York City was the first city. San Francisco followed shortly thereafter. This was back in probably August, September. And it's been city after city after city has been adding it. I believe that King County, Washington is the first county to require it. And I don't think there's a state-level requirement yet.
My travels outside of New Hampshire have been much more limited than they were prior to COVID.
Sure.
So.
Going to any of these big cities, you're going to have a real tough time if you don't have a vaccine. And, Mehdi, I was aware that, I'd heard some of the things about Quebec province, but I didn't know that it was all across at least the southern tier of Canada's provinces.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it is federal, but I'm just going to quote me on that if it's federal or not. I know for sure it's Ontario. That's where I am. I know for sure it's BC. Like the places of people I speak to.
Yeah, I know. I know Quebec has a curfew in place as well. So there's a tremendous level of restriction going on.
What's the point of the curfew?
There is no point.
You didn't hear the virus.
No control.
The virus doesn't move during the daytime, so it's okay to travel during the day.
This is a joke, right?
No, of course, the curfew's real, but yeah, what's the point? I have no idea. It's total control. That's what all this is about. It's not about stopping people from getting sick, because we know that vaccinated people can carry and can transmit this disease. So the whole thing is all about obedience. It's all about total state control. And the truckers, we've been covering this story, Mehdi, throughout the week, at least as best we can from what we hear. We've had a few people call in about it. Truckers, some say tens of thousands. That number seems unbelievable to me and to a lot of people. But others are saying hundreds.
Are you seeing thousands?
Have you physically seen them in real life?
No. So they are there already. Most of them, the convoy is already gone.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go there now because the actual protest part starts, the official start is tomorrow at noon. So I'm going to be there.
Now, this is going to be, is their plan to block the streets? What is it that they're going to do?
I don't know if their plan, I don't know what their exact plan is. I just know that they want to stay there until the mandates are lifted.
I mean, that's huge, so, right? Because there's not going to be enough motel space or whatever. The truckers can sleep in their own cabs.
Yeah.
So
that's probably not an issue for the truckers.
Yeah.
At least not long-haul truckers.
Although I understand that there are a lot of people just driving regular trucks and cars, backing them up. So it's not all, you know, big rigs that are doing this. But what have you seen? Have you seen the videos online? I've heard some people say that the convoy was as much as 70 kilometers in length at one point. Some estimated as many as 3,000 trucks could be in a convoy that was that long. What do you think?
Yeah, so I have seen 70 kilometers. The old record I know was an Egypt truck convoy of 7.5 kilometers.
Wow.
I know for sure that's been broken.
Okay.
That's been broken for sure. But I don't know exactly the number. The number that I am consistently hearing is 70 kilometers, though. There's a lot of video online. I know you don't have Facebook. Aria does. I'm not sure if Bonnie does. But if you go and search, like, Convoy 2022 or something like that, you'll see there's 800,000 people. It's a public one. That's the official one. And if you honestly want your phones to blow up, if you put a post on there saying, hey, we're Free Talk Live, we're pro-freedom, blah, 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 you know, you're going to get a lot of people calling about what's going on. Just so you know,
nice.
It's Freedom Convoy 2022 Canadian. And now Australia is doing it, by the way. And there are some posts showing Europe. There's a lot of truckers in Europe that are doing convoys meeting in Brussels or something. I'm not sure.
You know, one thing I can say is that this is potentially could have a serious economic impact and force the government's hand if they, you know, if you got enough people involved, enough truckers. I mean, the backbone of every country's economy just about is truckers.
Yeah, they can. I mean, the economy sinks or swims based on these guys and these women. They're amazing.
Yeah. And by the way, with this, as far as this QR code and showing ID is concerned, it's basically, and same with the states, like you said, you have some things like that, right, in cities. It's basically giving an underlying infrastructure for a surveillance state, if you want to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, it's putting that backbone there. So even, you know, if they put this out, they can, once you already have that citizens accepting that this is okay, it's just, now they can put anything in that QR code. Right? Like, that now is just a matter of what color crayons you want.
It's a slippery slope.
Just like the vaccine mandate. Yeah, just like the vaccine mandates. Once they can mandate putting that jab in you, now what they put in there is just a matter of opinion now, right? After that. Because the precedent has been set that they can put something in you.
Yeah,
this, you know, this reminds me very much of why I was always very opposed to things like fingerprints and, you know, DNA like swabs for prisoners and things like that, because it's like, you know, that's where it starts, because it's like, you know, who cares about the prisoners, right? But then they eventually ends up being you, and it's like, you know, where do you stop? It doesn't stop. It just continues on and on and on until it eventually affects everybody.
Exactly, because the main thing that you're gonna have to get people on board is actually putting that needle in you, right? After that, it's just just quibbling of what's going to be in the needle after that.
Yeah, sure.
Right? So it's a bit scary with that. But
Mehdi, will you do us a favor? I mean, if you think about it tomorrow night, give us another call, and or when the weekend's over, whenever you get a chance, whenever you get around to it, give us a wrap up on, you know, what you saw there in Ottawa when you arrive.
For sure. But if you do want a lot of info on it, I would go to one of those, like, you know, go on Facebook and one of those things. There's only a few sites and like a few web pages or whatever it's called, the Facebook pages. And you're going to get a lot of people then calling, because, you know, they're all happy that Joe Rogan mentioned it. Who else? I think Tucker Carlson or something. I mean, I know.
Well, feel free to drop our contact information in there. I don't think any of us are on Facebook. So.
Yeah. None of us here.
Yeah.
Oh, no one? I thought Aria is.
Well, Aria is, but none of us here.
Yeah, nobody here in the studio tonight. But feel free to drop in, you know, let them know we've been covering it. And
yeah, definitely interested in hearing from people.
Drop a phone number in and somebody can give us an update. Mehdi, thanks for the call tonight. We're definitely keeping our eye on this one, and it's very interesting. We'll continue. Hour 2's next. You can share your thoughts. Free Talk Live's video archives have been on Library for years. Library is an uncensorable, decentralized, blockchain-based media sharing protocol, and we're big fans of it here on Free Talk Live. In 2020, Library launched Odyssey, a video sharing website to compete with YouTube, and it's really taking off, now with over 1 million channels, many of whom are disaffected YouTube creators. During YouTube's crackdown for not towing the government line on COVID, the Free Talk Live YouTube channel started receiving strikes and could be completely taken down at any moment. Thankfully, Odyssey started offering live streaming, so we're now streaming live every night and posting our video archives permanently to Odyssey. You can watch live or anytime on our Odyssey channel by visiting video.freetalklive.com. If you want to go all in, download the desktop app at lbry.com, and then every video archive you watch, you'll help seed and keep it online forever. At minimum, we ask you visit video.freetalklive.com and follow us on Odyssey today. video.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, and you can join us. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. With you tonight, it's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And Chris.
So, phones are open. We're going to go back to them, and then on the way, we can dig in further to the latest attack against cryptocurrency. It's once again being called a Ponzi scheme, except this time it's being called a giant Ponzi scheme. So,
hey, we're serious. It's a giant Ponzi scheme this time.
I hope we have some good responses to that, because this is not the first time it's been called a Ponzi scheme.
No.
And I know that it's not a Ponzi scheme, because what like defines a Ponzi scheme, it doesn't quite match up with it.
Not even close.
Yeah. And it's like, I understand there, you know, and it's crazy because there are some things to be concerned about, I think, but it's not a Ponzi scheme.
And we've addressed the Ponzi scheme aspect of this, but yeah, this is yet another attack, and it's actually fairly detailed, so I want to get into it when we get the chance. But first, we're going to go to your phone calls and thoughts. First up, Sam is calling us from the seacoast of New Hampshire. Sam, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Sam. I'm 10, and I'm here to say that vaccine mandates and mask mandates are bad. If you go to the CVS and go to get a vaccine and ask what's in it, they're going to give you a blank piece of paper. If you go to a local public school and look at the kids, they're all wearing masks. It's a psyop. The government is making people scared. I think it's wrong.
Now, I have to ask, Sam, are you reading that off of like a prepared statement?
Yeah, I wrote it down.
You actually wrote it?
Yes, I did.
Okay, nice. Now, you talked about the government schools. Do you go to a government school?
No, I'm homeschooled.
Nice.
Nice, yeah.
Nice. All right, so are you, may I ask you this, how did you find Free Talk Live?
By a friend.
A friend? Okay, because you're a little out of our typical demographic, but I'm glad to hear that you're listening, and I'm glad to hear that that you're interested in calling in and sharing your thoughts.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Honestly.
You seem very well-spoken. What was it that, like, where were you when all this started? Were you living in the seacoast, or were you living somewhere else, and you kind of migrated here with your parents?
No. I was living in Berkeley, California.
Oh, my wow. God. What a huge
You probably know more about it than we do.
What were you saying there, Sam? You were what?
Oh, I was in Fiat Zone.
Fiat Zone?
Fiat Zone.
So, Berkeley, California, that's where you were when the whole COVID thing started?
Yes, that's where I was.
Obviously, you know, you were pretty young. You must have been 8, right? If you're 10 now, you must have been 8 at the time. Or roughly thereabouts, right?
Yeah.
And so I take it your parents decided it was a good idea to get out of Berkeley, California and move to New Hampshire. Is that what happened?
Yes.
What was that like for you? I mean, when you grew up in Berkeley, California, one of the most hard left liberal places in, you know, probably on the planet, and to move to one of the freest places on the planet, Could you tell, like, was there an immediate difference that you noticed when you first moved to New Hampshire? And if so, what was it that kind of clued you in that this place was different?
Oh, yeah. So, first of all, everyone was nice. Waved back.
Yeah.
They actually say hi when you say hi to them.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
That definitely sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Berkeley's one of those places where if you walk down the street, people avoid making eye contact. They never speak to one another, that kind of place?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever had to wear a mask for, I don't know, if you've ever went to public school or, I don't know, have you ever been forced to wear a mask, Sam?
Yes. I used to be in the government public school system.
Oh, wow.
In Berkeley.
Hmm.
And I had to wear a mask 6 hours a day straight.
Oh, that's so
sad. Wow.
And yeah, you could, you know, ask for a breathing break. It's like taking off your mask.
Wait, is that
and going outside?
Wow. Is that are you serious?
Yeah.
They have something called breathing
breaks? I'm serious. A breathing
wow.
break.
You know, it's interesting because I usually don't think of these masks as being that big of a deal, but I usually I'm thinking about it from my perspective. I go into a place and I put a mask on for 2 seconds and I take it off when I leave. Like,
yeah.
You know, at most. But to think that they're actually...
You don't still do that, do you?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't... I mean, I've done it like... No.
Okay, good.
I mean, we're living in Keene, New Hampshire. Yeah. I mean, it's like nobody's wearing a mask.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Okay.
There's a lot of people
nobody's
wearing a mask.
Nobody's making you wear
okay,
a mask.
Okay, let me rephrase this.
Every single person in Kohl's, we were at Kohl's
all
today.
All the people I'm around are not wearing masks.
Sure, well, you're around free staters and libertarians all the time. But, Sam, very interesting. So you noticed that people are nicer here in New Hampshire. Was there anything else that jumped out at you?
Yes. Before the mask mandate in Portsmouth indoors, nobody really wore a mask. If you went downtown, you know, you would see people outside with a mask.
Mm-hmm.
But if you went into Hannaford, you know, not much people are wearing masks. And a lot of people are not wearing masks.
Hmm. Well, that's good to know. I know Portsmouth is like Keene, and they're both sort of pretty liberal cities as far as the people that that live in them. But it's definitely a less liberal place than Berkeley, California. So I'm glad to hear that it was such a positive move. And I'm glad to hear that your parents got you out of the government school system. Because sadly, the kids at the government schools in New Hampshire, it seems like they're still being forced to wear masks. So I don't know if there's any kind of exit out of that besides getting your kids out of government school. So kudos to you.
I mean, that can't be all throughout all of New Hampshire because there's been so much fighting with that.
Maybe
right?
Not the North Country or something like that, but around here, that's the way it is. And East.
I believe it in Keene. That
in
might
the Seacoast, it is as well, from what I understand. They're arresting people at school board meetings for not wearing masks out in Timberlane School District. So.
Yeah, and I'm conscious of that. And I haven't, and here's the thing, like, I'm not following it really deeply, but I'm on like Telegram groups and Matrix groups and things like that talking about it, right?
It's so bad, Chris, that right now there's a bill in front of the New Hampshire State House that would actually prohibit school boards from mandating masks.
Right, and I'm aware of that bill, too.
That gives you some idea of how bad it
is. But, you know, the fact that people are fighting it kind of makes me think that, I mean, I know we can fight things and lose, don't get me wrong, but it kind of makes me think that it's not 100% of the people supporting it, you know, the masks, right?
So, no, of course not.
So I feel like
it's probably most of the school boards are supporting it because those are control freaks.
For sure. I don't doubt that one bit.
Sam, great call tonight, man. I definitely appreciate hearing from you. Thanks
for... call us back if you have anything else you want to say.
Yeah, he's probably one of the most well-spoken callers. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the most well-spoken callers that we've had in a long time. Sarah is on the line. Sarah, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was cute.
Yeah, you've got a high bar set for you here, Sarah. How are you going to live up to this?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, there are many large apartment complexes here that are choosing to become smoke-free. So, we're talking about maybe 5 stories high, maybe like 100 units, those big buildings, and even... and they're asking everybody to smoke outside. No smoking at all indoors.
Now, is that something that they can do if somebody has a lease that allows smoking? Are they just updating their leases when their lease runs to renewal phase and saying, all right, well, if you want to stay, you now have to agree you can't smoke? Or are they just asking people to comply with these new rules?
Well, that's the part that I just kind of that's the part that I was kind of wondering, I guess, is that when they renew the lease, that's the policy. They just can't. I don't think they just impose it. But that's what the complex have decided. So if you signed a 1-year lease and then this happens right in the middle of it, I guess they do have to give you time to adjust. But the whole point is that it's the insurance liability. That once there's a fire,
A cigarette smoker is definitely more likely to, you know, fall asleep in bed with a cigarette in their hand, and then the whole building goes up. Thank you, Sarah, for the call tonight. The number is 603-283-6160. Looks like the smokers are going to have to form their own apartment building soon. You can join us. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Phone's open. You can join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And Chris.
Free Talk Live is brought to you by Bitcoin.com. We had a news story that Bonnie shared with us earlier in the show that came from news.bitcoin.com, and they've got the top news headlines every single day. It's not all about just Bitcoin. It's about the cryptocurrency industry, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and many others. You can get the latest headlines anytime over at news.bitcoin.com. And they've also got all kinds of things for newbies. So if you're brand new to crypto, get over there, hit get started at the top of the page. Introductory videos. You can buy Bitcoin and other cryptos through Bitcoin.com. So a very, very handy site. Lots of good information. That's Bitcoin.com. So should we get into this Bitcoin attack piece? The latest hit piece by, let's see, Sohail Andras Mortazavi over at JacobinMag.com. Now, do you know what Jacobin Mag is?
No.
As I understand it is a hard leftist publication. So I don't know if they're straight up communist.
I kind of almost feel like that would make them pro-Bitcoin if it's hard left. Like anything that's usually like on the fringes seems to...
Yeah, I always thought that cryptocurrency could be very appealing to people on the left.
Yep.
If you are someone who actually believes in helping the little guy,
right,
which is a lot of people on the left, they want to help the poor, they want to help the sick, they want to help people like that, right? They want the little guy to have an even playing field or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know a lot of people on the left that have crypto stuff on their like websites to make donations or you know accept payment. You know,
yeah. Unfortunately, there's a lot of pressure from part of the left to attack cryptocurrency. That's why they say it's not good for the for the earth or whatever. Oh, too much power.
Yep. Yeah, there was this ridiculous article that came out saying that cryptocurrency is racist.
Wait, what?
They've got all this incredibly attacks.
So makes sense.
You know that these are the status quo leftists, right? These people that they're already in power. They like being in power, and
they like giving power to the big guys more than the little guys.
Yeah, and they know how to scare off the average leftist. Just tell them it's going to hurt the environment and they're going to be against it.
Yeah.
So that's what they're doing. Now, this magazine, Jacobin Magazine, as they say it themselves in their little header, it's a leading voice of the American left offering socialist perspectives on politics, economics, and culture. So now you know what you're getting into. And they only publish 4 times a year. So they're that lazy. They don't have enough content, or they don't want to do it. Anyway, here's their hit piece on cryptocurrency. And they just start out heavy here. They say, cryptocurrency is a scam. All of it. Full stop. Not just the latest pump and dump S-coin schemes in which fraudsters hype a little-known cryptocurrency before dumping it in Unison, or rug pulls in which a new cryptocurrency's developers abandon the project and run off with the investor funds. All cryptocurrency and the industry as a whole are built atop market manipulation, without which they could not exist at scale. This should surprise no one who understands how cryptocurrency works. Blockchains are, at their core, simply append-only spreadsheets maintained across decentralized peer-to-peer, which they put in quotes, networks. Not unlike those used for torrenting pirated files.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. You know, you would think pirating would be a very would be more supported by the left. Than anybody, because it's
but they're not against things like intellectual property, are they?
I would think they would be. I mean, under communism, they're like, you can't make money, right? And if you, I mean, I don't know. It seems like to me that it would be a very, you know, that would be, I don't know. But this is kind of one of these things where it's like, are these actual social? Like, I mean.
They say so.
They say they're socialists, but are they? Do they practice socialism? And it doesn't sound like it.
Well, how can you
could create, you know, a socialist utopia with a cryptocurrency. So I don't see what it's just a tool. How could cryptocurrency be a scam?
I agree with you entirely, Bonnie. It is just a tool.
Well, how do you practice socialism without a government? That's a socialist government. The whole idea of a socialist is to take control of the state and then have the state take control of the means of production.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're just fantasy in fantasy land, you know? He says, just as torrents allow users to share files directly, cryptocurrency blockchains allow users to maintain a shared ledger of financial transactions without the need of a central server or managing authority. That's a true statement.
Yep.
It may be the only true part in this article. I don't know. We'll see. It's a pretty lengthy piece. Users are thus able to make direct online transactions with one another as if they were trading cash. And again, you would think...
Why are they against cash, right? Like, this just seems insane.
Yeah, and you would think they would be in favor of cutting out the big banks, cutting out the mega tech corporations, but no, they're saying this is bad. It's bad to be able to have an online transaction direct person to person. I mean, that's as grassroots as it gets.
And this does kind of follow with like socialism and communism. They're trying to make the system as inefficient as possible. And, you know, and look what happens. I mean, we have lots and lots of examples of socialism in practice, and it fails again and again and again.
Sure does. He says, this, we are told, is revolutionary. But making unmediated online transactions securely in a trustless environment in this way is not without costs. Cryptocurrency blockchains generally don't allow previously verified transactions to be deleted or altered. The data is immutable.
Why would you want to be able to delete it or alter? That would be manipulation, and that's bad for, you know, economics.
Updates are added by chaining a new block of transaction data to the chain of existing blocks. But then he's kind of explaining what a blockchain does there. And again, that's true.
And I don't get how it's, you know, bad.
Oh, he's got more to say.
This is like coming out against accountability, right? Like, And theoretically, like, isn't that what socialists want? Is accountability? I mean, how do you have a government, like, be pro-government and then not want accountability in the government, right?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, ultimately, the people who were communists who did get in control of a government, like the Russian communists, they did not want accountability.
Right.
They did not want transparency. They'd shoot you if you disagreed with them, right? You're going off to the gulag work camp, and you're probably going to die in the, you know, the sub-zero temperatures because they're not going to give you any boots.
It just sounds so hypocritical to me.
Of course it is. But going on. But to ensure the integrity of the blockchain, the network needs a way to trust that new blocks are accurate. Popular cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Dogecoin all employ a proof-of-work consensus method for verifying updates to the blockchain. Without getting overly technical, this mechanism allows blockchain users, known as miners in this context, to compete for the right to verify and add the next block by being the first to solve an incredibly complex math puzzle.
Oh, that's what they don't like. They don't like competition.
That's so true.
But thus far, the description here is accurate. There's a lot of really poor media articles about what cryptocurrency is, and they just don't know what they're talking about. They got this one. It's right so far.
I have to wonder where they pulled it from, like where they copied and pasted it from.
I don't know. I think this person probably understands it. We'll see. The point of this process is to make adding new blocks so difficult that meddling with the blockchain is prohibitively expensive. Though the correct answer to these puzzles can be easily verified by anyone on the network, actually being the first to find the answer requires an enormous amount of processing power and thus electricity, and outcompeting the rest of the network is impractical. So we'll talk more about this attack.
But there's also luck. You can also get the block or mine the block. Or what is mine the answer through luck?
Well, some luck is involved, but you've got to have a lot of processing power to have that luck. There's more coming up here at 603-283-6160. We'll continue. Your thoughts are welcome. It's Free Talk Live. On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com. It is Free Talk Live. Phones are open. You can join the show if you want. The number is 603-283-6160. Whether it's talking about the truckers heading to Ottawa, Canada for a massive protest, potentially shutting down operation of the city itself, which would be really interesting. It's going to start tomorrow, I guess, at noon. I don't know if that's central time. Is Ottawa in central or eastern? I don't know. Wherever it is, it's nearby somewhere. It's like in the central or eastern, somewhere in that range. So we'll find out more as that develops. If you want to weigh in, you're certainly welcome to join us. It's Ian, Bonnie, and Chris in the studio here tonight. We've got a socialist rag called the Jacobin Magazine, jacobinmag.com, with a straight-up attack against not just Bitcoin, but all of cryptocurrency. He says cryptocurrency is a scam. The author Sohail Andras Mortazabi continues. And what he's doing to start the story here is explaining basically what Bitcoin is, not getting too technical about it. And so far, it's a pretty accurate description about what is the blockchain and, you know, how does the mining aspect of it work. And for their troubles, he writes, miners collect a reward for being the first to verify the next block. The Bitcoin blockchain adds a new block every 10 minutes. That's on an average. It's sometimes longer, sometimes not so long. And the block reward is currently 6.25 newly minted Bitcoins, worth nearly $500,000 at Bitcoin's last all-time high, which was around $68,000 a piece. Competition for block rewards has led to a computing power arms race as prices have risen. Mining Bitcoins on a personal computer is no longer feasible. The majority of cryptocurrency mining is... Oops, sorry about that. Chris, go ahead.
I don't know about that. I mean, you can still mine. You just have to be part of a pool.
Yeah, but you do have to have special equipment. You can't just plug a laptop in and
but
do
is it
Bitcoin
millions
mining.
Of dollars? It's not unfeasible.
No, it's not millions of dollars. It's hundreds.
Yeah, I mean, you do need powerful hardware. I mean, for it to have any kind of worth to you, obviously... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to have specialized mining tools.
Again, that's just Bitcoin, though, not necessarily other cryptocurrencies. Other cryptocurrencies are easier to
that's
do.
That's true. Yeah. Monero, I think you can use a laptop.
And he did say at the beginning that this was about all cryptocurrencies.
He did. So he goes on. He says the majority of cryptocurrency mining is now conducted using commercial mining farms, essentially huge warehouses running thousands of high powered computer processors day and night. The electricity expended mining Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies is rapidly approaching 1% of global usage, which is famously greater than the total electricity consumption of many smaller developed nations. So he's trotting out the environmental tactics here, which is to be expected from
electricity. But not anywhere near the amount of energy used by the military-industrial complex.
Or the banking system.
And not to mention, you know, we constantly are talking, well, I feel like I'm constantly talking nowadays about waste energy. You know, it's the electricity that's being produced, like, for example, at night, pretty much everywhere, that's not actually being utilized because the utilization goes down below, you know, the actual amount of electricity that's being produced.
People are sleeping.
Right. People are sleeping. You don't have the lights on. That means it's a perfect time to mine crypto because it's cheap. You know, when nobody's needing it, you know, it's the time you want to do those types of tasks.
And so here he gets into the part of the article where we're going to be able to tear it up. So he says, given that cryptocurrencies don't produce anything of material value, This enormous waste of resources renders the whole enterprise a negative-sum game.
That's retarded.
Okay, that's like saying the banking system doesn't offer something of value, right? Like, I think when I go to the bank, you know, I might not like the bank, but when I go to the bank and I try and do a wire transfer to buy some Wi-Fi adapters for my business, you're telling me that doesn't have a value? I mean, what's the alternative? Shipping gold bars to China in order to buy Wi-Fi adapters?
Right, you can't. I mean, that's insane. You can't get gold across customs. They're going to steal it.
Right. There is some value from a digital currency, whether or not it's crypto or not.
Yeah.
But it certainly has value because it does enable, you know, somebody to conduct transactions online.
There's tremendous value in that.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting that he uses the term material value. Well, is it physical? No.
Language that sounded anti-cash at the beginning.
If that argument held water, then you're telling me that wire transfers are also have no material value. Yeah. Which just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, these are people who hate markets, right? They're the leftists.
I guess. I mean, this is a communism. Like this is more of a communist kind of argument.
Socialist magazine, so of course it is.
Yeah, I guess. But again, if we start looking at communism, like, can you show me a communist country that is, you know, really successful that's not based around resource extraction or something of that nature?
There's no such thing as a successful communist country.
Mm.
There's some communist countries that still exist, but they're not successful.
Yeah.
Investors, he says, can only cash out by selling their coins to other investors.
That's not true. You can spend it.
Hmm.
That's true. I mean, you could interpret a spend as a sell, right? Like you're trading, you're selling your coin in return for a hot dog or a bowl of fun noodle soup or something.
His point is supposed to be that it gives you no material value. So Chris's point that you can buy things with it. Shows that's not true.
He doesn't even know that, probably. He has no idea that's even a possibility. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You can also pay people with it, and you can get in return work for it, right? Like,
right.
So if somebody wants to mow your lawn and you want to pay him in cryptocurrency, that's another way to get out
somebody
of
crypto. Somebody needs to come to New Hampshire because we'll show you how cryptocurrencies are actually used in the real world.
I don't think the socialist needs to come to New Hampshire.
No, that's right. Yeah,
visit. Just a visit. You know, maybe we'll change some minds about...
You can watch a video.
Yeah, that'll work too. Yeah.
He says, but only after the miners and various cryptocurrency service providers take the house's rake. In other words, investors cannot, in the aggregate, cash out for even what they put in, as cryptocurrencies are inefficient by design. All right, so he's not being fair. There literally are thousands of cryptocurrencies.
It's manipulating reality, right? They're supposed to be inefficient. Like, that's the whole point of... It wouldn't be worth something if it wasn't inefficient.
When you say it's inefficient...
I mean, it's supposed to be inefficient.
It's costly.
It's costly, which is a sort of inefficiency.
But it's efficient in that you make more. Like, if it wasn't worth doing, you wouldn't do it.
It's
right?
worth
like,
doing not because of how efficient it is so much as because it's a limiting. Like, the inefficiency is limiting.
Makes it rarer.
Right, exactly. So
some miners are more efficient than others. So you can buy a mining rig, but we're talking about
something different at that point, I think.
Well, I think what he's referring to is that when you get a Bitcoin and you spend the Bitcoin, it's going to cost you 0.00.
Okay, so the efficiency of the transaction.
I think that's what he's referring
to. Okay, which also doesn't make sense, but maybe for different reasons.
So the point that I wanted to make about this is that, yes, there is a fee in order to spend your cryptocurrency. In fact, there's a fee when you spend your credit cards and you spend your debit cards. And the fee, in most cases, is much higher. There's a fee when you do a wire transfer. And in every single cryptocurrency's case, except Ethereum, the fees are much, much lower than a wire transfer to transact money.
Taxes whenever you use U.S. dollars.
That's true, too.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of hidden fees when it comes to U.S. dollars that people don't understand because they don't see it like... They don't see it as a separate, like taxes you'll see on the bottom of your sheet, but they don't show the hidden taxes and of using the using the fiat currency, right? So, but if they did, they would show you things like, oh, there was a 6% cost because of, you know, credit card transaction fees and You know, there was a cost, even if you're using like U.S. dollars, like physical dollars, well, there's a cost to producing those dollars, and sure, that has to be paid by either inflation or by taxes or some other means. And because you don't see it, doesn't mean it's not there, right? And if you look at it from a business perspective, like I have a business, and most people don't look at it from a business perspective because they don't have a business and they don't understand this. But I understand this because I have a business. And if you look at like our profit margins, they're less in some cases than the fees and the costs of those running those transactions. So if you're making $70 off of selling a computer and there's a 2.9% fee on that,
it's not even worth doing it.
Yeah, your profit margin, the banks are actually making more money
than you are
off of your transaction than you are.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's an important point. And you're right. A lot of people, especially socialists, have never run a business.
No.
They don't know what it's like to be a business owner. If you get a lot of cash in your business and you take it to the bank, guess what?
There's a fee.
The bank's going to charge you a fee to do a cash deposit.
Yep.
Now, the average person doesn't encounter those fees because they don't deposit enough cash to hit the level where the fees get triggered. But they still get you with their fees in other ways.
Yeah, right? I've only had that happen, I think, one time where I deposited enough cash to make that cost come into effect.
There's
it's like,
more
oh man,
up.
I forgot about this.
Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Phone's open. You can join us here. Number 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We're sharing the latest hit piece against cryptocurrency. This one isn't just against Bitcoin. This is against all of cryptocurrencies. With you tonight, it's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And Chris.
And don't forget, you can join us online anytime you want. Head over to freetalklive.com and you can enjoy the features there. We've got a social media site at social.freetalklive.com, and that allows you to create content, share with other listeners of the show and anyone else in the Mastodon network, because it is a Mastodon-based site. That means it's open source. That means it's self-hosted. That means it is federated, and it's pretty cool. It works just like Twitter, except without the mega corporation telling you what to do. So head over to social.freetalklive.com. And Freedom's Phoenix is a liberty-oriented news aggregation site. So if you want the freshest news and perspectives on current events from those who value liberty, you can go to freedomsphoenix.com and get them there. That's Freedom's Phoenix, Freedoms with an S, phoenix.com. They've got the Daily Dispatch, which will keep you up to date on the latest on science, technology, historical findings, liberty news, government overspending, and the rise of the police state. It's Freedom's with an S, phoenix.com. So back to the hit piece here. Cryptocurrency, he says, is a scam. All of it, he says.
That's just so ridiculous. It's a tool that does what it's intended to do. How can you just call that a scam?
Look, it's not that it is a scam. It is more like there are scams, and just like people use the US dollar to commit, or in the process of scamming somebody, they use cryptocurrency.
I think people
most of these scams that occur with cryptocurrency were happening before cryptocurrency, you know, or before Bitcoin was created, right?
Well,
there were
that's not what this guy is claiming. He's claiming
not
that
yet,
it is a scam, because in the title he said it's a giant Ponzi scheme.
He's saying it's fundamentally a scam because they're taking fees and because lots of electricity and so on and so forth. But of course, not all cryptocurrencies use
is
a lot of
Visa
electricity.
Is a scam? I mean, because they also
might
charge a fee.
He might say that, actually.
Okay, MasterCard is a scam? Is the bank a scam because the bank charges you, you know, a 1% to deposit, you know, cash?
Great question. I mean, he would be against those things too.
What, does he only want the government to deposit bread in a bread line to people,
maybe,
and nobody can use money to exchange goods?
It wouldn't surprise me, right? Like the true communist vision of a lot of them is to eliminate money entirely,
I mean,
right? So of course he would be against money.
You know what's humorous about this is that communists, like during the Soviet Union, they actually had I believe the ruble? I don't know if it was called the ruble.
Whatever it was.
But yeah, they had money. They had dirty fiat, right? Just like the capitalists did.
Yeah. Whenever is a central bank going to abolish itself? Like the whole vision of communism is, okay, well, we only need the government temporarily, and then we're going to abolish the government, and it will be true paradise on earth. Everyone will share everything from each according to his ability to each according to his need. But why would the government abolish itself at any point, especially a central bank?
Yeah.
Especially when you give them all the power.
Right.
It is interesting. There was one thing that is kind of interesting. at least some of the scam that exists with like capitalism is in the taxes, like the sales taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that the Soviet Union didn't have. When they priced something, they put 10 rubles. It was 10 rubles. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be 10 rubles and like a tenth of a ruble for like taxes. It was what was advertised.
Well, we have that here in New Hampshire, but we're not a communist state. There's no sales tax here in New Hampshire.
That is true.
Yes, I mean, that's not it's not a sales point of communism. That's just, they just didn't have that tax.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
This makes them a poor and costly form of currency, he says, and absolutely ludicrous as a long-term investment. I mean, how can you even say that when Bitcoin has been the number one investment in the last decade? How can you call it ludicrous?
I hate calling it an investment, but at the same time, you're right. Like, I'm not going to deny the fact that it has been the best investment in, like, I don't know if history is the right choice of words, but certainly in the last decade.
It wasn't made with that in mind.
No,
I don't think Satoshi Nakamoto predicted that necessarily. He made it, as you said earlier, or she, we don't know who Satoshi is, but Satoshi made Bitcoin as peer-to-peer cash.
Right. It was intended to be a currency, not some sort of investment vehicle. And you know, in some respects, that might actually sort of be a failure of Bitcoin. You know, it has unfortunately not done as well as a currency as it has as an investment vehicle.
So he goes on with another common objection about cryptocurrency. He says we could dismiss them as a doomed experiment in the, quote, greater fool, unquote, theory of investing, in which investors attempt to profit on overvalued or even worthless assets by selling them on to the next greater fool. Think of it as gambling on a high-stakes game of musical chairs. If the rising price of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies were simply a function of demand, he says.
You know, there is something that I kind of have to, how do I say this? There may be a flaw, right, in how we're thinking or something. Like, for example, we think of cryptocurrency or Bitcoin generally as like gold, right? But gold doesn't...
Like a digital gold.
Yeah, but gold doesn't behave the way Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies generally do.
Bitcoin's, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency generally go... They become more valuable over time, whereas gold tends to stay more stable.
Yeah, but gold has also become more... I mean, when compared to the dollar, over time, gold has become more valuable. It's not been true in the last decade, generally.
Yeah.
But over...
Well, the dollar is
200 years.
The dollar is more like it goes down, but gold stays more stable, and Bitcoin kind of goes more an upward direction.
We see the dollar going down. The average person doesn't. The average person sees the price of gold was $300 an ounce 2 decades ago, and now it's $1,800.
Right. But the point that I'm trying to make is that it doesn't really do what gold does. If it did,
yes, you're right. It goes up much faster.
Right. Which in some sense. That kind of,
I think it's just because everybody who's going to be in the market is in it yet. New people are joining all the time. It's a new thing. It's not, I mean, gold
so
is
it hasn't
ancient.
Found its level.
Yeah, it hasn't levered. It hasn't like leveled out. I think that's probably a good way to describe it and explains why, you know, whereas gold, everybody who's into it is already into it and, you know, they're not gaining people. Whereas, you know, cryptocurrency is the demand is increasing because more and more people get on every day.
But what?
So eventually it should stable out.
Okay. But what about the greater fool theory that he's talking about? Because this gets brought up by a lot of people, not just leftists. It gets brought up by like the old money people who want to attack Bitcoin that love the banks and love the old system.
Explain what it is.
So he talks about it here. So the idea is investors attempt to profit on overvalued or worthless assets by selling them on to the next greater fool.
Okay, so you know this is not exclusive to Bitcoin. We have the same problem with real estate, right?
Exactly.
We have this with all sorts of other asset classes. So I don't think it's
how about the dollar itself, right? Like in a situation of hyperinflation, we don't think about it like this in the United States yet.
Mm.
Like we're seeing inflation. There's always been inflation. It's now more recognizable than it's ever been, at least in my lifetime.
Sure.
But we're not like Venezuela level hyperinflation, right? Where when you go into a bar and you sit down and you order a drink, and then, you know, half an hour later when you order a second drink, the price has gone up.
Yeah.
Right? It's not that bad here yet. But isn't that the same situation where you're trying to get rid of your bolivar, your Venezuelan bolivar, and turn it into a beer or turn it into a loaf of bread before the price continues to escalate on it? Isn't that also the greater fool? Like, you want to get rid of this stuff. But the difference, of course, being Bitcoin can go up in value and the Venezuelan bolivar or the U.S. dollar is going down in value. So I just don't buy this. And again, he's also ignoring the fact that, as you pointed out, cryptocurrency is something you can use for payment. It's something that you can use to pay somebody for their work. It's something that you can use to pay for a bowl of soup or whatever.
It's
right?
It's more like we're quibbling over how good the algorithm is. And I think in some respect you could say Bitcoin is a terror. It's not that great. The
it's
algorithm
dated.
Is dated and it needs improvement. It needs work. And
they refuse to work on it.
I think that's a fair assessment of Bitcoin and a lot of cryptos. But I don't necessarily think that's a fair assessment of crypto in general, because there's other criticisms of Bitcoin. Like, it's not anonymous. It's not really private. But there are cryptocurrencies that are private, like Monero and Zcash. And it's not that they solve every problem, but they do solve some of these problems. And there are now cryptos, apparently decentralized cryptos, that also solve some of the, what they've referred to as instability. So if that is in case...
You're talking about stable coins.
Yeah. Not stable coins specifically, but more like... And there might be another one out there too, but more like... The Monero fork that's
Haven. There's also a bunch of cryptos that have next to zero fees. So his concern about fees is not true across all of cryptocurrency. Like Stellar, for instance,
it's certainly less
no
than
fee.
Bank fees in many cases, in a lot of cases.
Stellar, you can exchange on the Stellar network. You can send Stellar for nothing. They'll actually, whatever the fees are so small, Stellar, the organization, will reimburse you for it.
Yeah.
So there's literally no fees on some of these things. IOTA, I don't think there's any fees on that, too. More coming up here. It's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. Hour 3, kicking it off here. You can join us. The number 603-283-6160. At 603-283-6160 in the studio tonight. It's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And Chris.
We are talking about a fairly detailed and I would say interesting hit piece by the leftists over at Jacobin Magazine against not just Bitcoin, but all of cryptocurrency. This guy claims that all of crypto is a giant scam. And he's going to try to make his argument for that. He doesn't like the fact that there's fees involved, even though there's some cryptos that have absolutely no fee or a so small a fee you can't even tell that it exists kind of fee. He complains about the electricity consumed, even though it uses less electricity than the banking system. And as you pointed out, Bonnie, way less than the military-industrial complex. So we're going to continue, though, taking this post down. And if you want to weigh in, you can. The number is 603-283-6160. So he gets into his next segment here. He says, headline, the central bank of crypto. This isn't some big secret. He says, in a widely circulated 2017 paper, researchers attributed over half of the then recent rise in Bitcoin's price to purchases made by a single entity on Bitfinex, a cryptocurrency exchange headquartered in Hong Kong and registered in the Virgin Islands. These purchases were timed to buoy the price of Bitcoin during market downturns in a way that so strongly indicated market manipulation, the authors found it inconceivable that such trading patterns could happen or could occur by happenstance. Critically, these purchases were not made with dollars, but with Tether, another type of cryptocurrency known as a stablecoin, because its price is pegged to the dollar so that one Tether is always worth $1. Many offshore cryptocurrency exchanges lack access to traditional banking, presumably because banks deem doing business with them too risky. Bitfinex, which shares a parent company and executive team with Tether Limited, which is the issuer of its namesake crypto, struggled to find U.S. banking partners after Wells Fargo abruptly stopped processing wire transfers between the exchange's Taiwanese banks and their American customers in 2017 without giving reason. This was a problem. Without traditional banking relationships for issuing wire transfers, exchanges cannot easily facilitate trades between buyers and sellers on their platforms. Someone has to pass cash between buyers and sellers. Stablecoins solve this problem by standing in for actual real dollars. They allow cryptocurrency markets to maintain ample liquidity, the ease with which assets can be converted into cash without actually having to have cash on hand.
You're right, author. Cryptocurrency is amazing.
Yes, it is indeed. Tether has become integral to the functioning of global crypto markets. The majority of Bitcoin trades are now conducted in Tether, 70% by volume. By comparison, only 8% of trade volume is conducted in real dollars, with the remainder being other crypto-to-crypto pairs. Now, that's interesting. I did not know that detail, but it's completely believable to me. I believe that that is true. If you've seen exchanges, you know that Tether is the largest trading pair.
And this is
section.
The thing. Like, I don't think that this, I think there are valid criticisms.
Sure.
And I think this, you kind of might be bringing, this is kind of a point that I think isn't, I'm not writing it off entirely, right?
Like, no, I'm not either on this one.
But that doesn't mean that crypto, your conclusion that cryptocurrency, you know, is one big pyramid scheme. That doesn't mean that cryptocurrency is
not
one big pyramid scheme or, you know, it's a fraud or any
of
those.
It may mean
things.
That Tether is a fraud because that's what a lot of people that's what a lot of people have been alleging for a very long time. And Tether has, from my understanding, never really satisfactorily shown its books, has never really been audited satisfactorily.
I mean, this is something this has been a concern in, you know, at least libertarian circles since the beginning of stablecoins. So
well, let me go on. He says many industry skeptics and even its proponents see this as a systemic risk and a ticking time bomb. And I don't disagree with him. If it's true that if it's true that Tether isn't backed to the point that it is, right? Like, so Tether's issued $70+ billion worth of Tether, which means they supposedly have $70 billion in a vault, in multiple bank accounts, in U.S. treasuries, in all these sort of quote unquote dollar existing, dollar equivalents.
They did expand that to be assets as opposed to dollars specifically. So,
like I said,
treasury
bonds, and things that are essentially cashinable for dollars.
Yeah, sure.
So if they don't have what they say they have, let's say they only have $30 billion instead of $70 billion. Well, what's that going to, if that ever comes out, that could absolutely crash the price of Tether. And if indeed these cryptocurrency exchanges are leaning on Tether as their major trading pairs, right? Like, so a trading pair is when you go on a cryptocurrency exchange, let's say you have Bitcoin and you want to exchange it into something else. Well, it's not Bitcoin. Pick something more obscure like
Acoin
or Monero or something like that. Whatever it is you have, there's probably only a trading pair to either Bitcoin or to Tether. And there's not like a Dash to Monero trading pair. There's not a so you have to, if you have Dash and you want Monero, you probably have to go from Dash to Tether and then Tether to Monero, or from Dash to Bitcoin and then Bitcoin to Monero. So if there's a bunch of these exchanges that have just Tether trading pairs and then Tether takes a dump, then that's going to be really bad. So
but
do
will
agree
it be
with
that
critique.
Big of a deal if they come out with decentralized stable coins before that happens?
That's an excellent question as well. Yeah, so I think that these exchanges need to consider decentralizing their stablecoin options and not leaning on this one stablecoin so heavily.
You know, you actually kind of have to wonder if this change does occur, it could undermine, you know, Tether and undermine the whole system as a result too. As people move away, you know, the cracks in stablecoins, you know, traditional stablecoins begin to show, and then, you know, I mean, when you have nothing left and you can't pay out,
that could be bad.
It could cause a problem too.
He says the whole system relies on traders actually being able to exchange Tethers for real cash, or far more commonly in practice, other traditional cryptocurrencies that can be sold for cash on banked exchanges like Coinbase or Gemini, both headquartered in the United States. Should faith in Tether falter, we could see its peg to the dollar collapse in a flash. This would be a doomsday scenario for crypto markets, with investors holding or trading crypto assets on unbanked exchanges unable to, quote, cash out, since there was never any cash there to begin with, only stablecoins. This would almost certainly cause a liquidity crisis on banked exchanges as well, as investors rush to cash out their crypto anywhere possible amid cratering prices, and banked exchanges processing far less volume would almost certainly not be able to pick up the slack.
He's really not making that great of a point to me anyways, because It's not an issue that's integral to cryptocurrency. It's not like this is an issue that will always and has to be an issue with the idea of cryptocurrency, because if they come out with decentralized stablecoins and exchanges decentralize their options, like you said, it just wouldn't be an issue anymore.
They could head this off if they do that. But, yeah. But his point is still good in that most of the exchanges have not done that.
Yeah, but I'm saying is it doesn't prove his point that cryptocurrency is a scam.
Yeah, that's true. Crypto is not a scam.
His conclusion is wrong. He makes, even though he makes a few points that are not terrible.
He's pointing out that the industry is too centralized, honestly.
Absolutely.
It's too dependent on this one stablecoin.
I think we would, I think the three of us agree on him on that.
He says, further, there's no reason to have any faith in Tether. Tether's peg to the dollar was initially predicated on the claim the currency was fully backed by actual cash reserves, a dollar held in reserve for every Tether issued, though this was later shown to be a lie. The company has since continuously revised down claims about how much cash they keep in reserve. Their latest public attestation on the matter from March of last year claimed to be holding only 3% of their reserves in cash. The rest was held in, quote, cash equivalents, unquote, which is mostly what they call commercial paper, essentially IOUs from corporations that may or may not exist, given that reputable actors trading in commercial paper don't appear to be doing any business with Tether. So there's a huge question mark about what these people actually have to back up their crypto.
It's interesting. If they're smart, right, it actually is probably better. And I don't know. Like, I don't know what the story actually is. But if they're smart, I would think that they would be investing all those dollars into things that actually grow in value over
time. You would
think,
yeah.
Because then they would have more in assets than they value in assets right. than they actually need in order to have in, dollars.
Well, wouldn't they have to? Because how else could they pay? How else can they pay their bills?
Right.
Right. Like if you just
would think they would have to probably.
So more coming up here at 603-283-6160, but they've never really been like truly
clear about
transparent
it.
Or clear. And there's really some huge question marks that exist about them. You can join us though. 603-283-6160. This is Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, phones open. You can join the show. Number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here tonight, it's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And Chris.
And we're going to continue with your phone calls. Also, more of this attack against cryptocurrency by the left. People at Jacobin Mag, which is basically a socialist rag. We will continue with that here in moments. Also, definitely want to let you know about Intercoin. And Intercoin is one of those of many thousands of cryptocurrencies out there. It's very speculative investment. But it's an interesting concept, and you can go to intercoin.org and learn more about the Intercoin vision. They did launch their investor token recently, and it is available on a centralized exchange, xmarkets.com, exmarkets.com. You can sign up there with an email address and keep your privacy intact. And indeed, you can trade Bitcoin for Tether and then use Tether to buy ITR. And if you're going to use Tether, use it temporarily, in my opinion. You should not hold Tether for any longer than is absolutely necessary to conduct whatever trades you're looking to conduct. But that's what you have to do to get it over at xmarkets.com. Eventually, you're going to find more, I think, availability on decentralized exchanges. But if you want to, go to exmarkets.com and you can buy some ITR there. That's the Intercoin Investor Token. Exmarkets.com. You just might be advancing the cause of liberty around the world. Let's go to your phone calls and thoughts. Joe is on the line in Michigan listening online. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, the other day, the Biden administration announced that, I'm not sure if you guys covered this or not, but they announced that they're going to, for national security reasons, they're going to, through executive fiat, they're going to start regulating Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies.
They did say that. Yeah, we're still waiting on the fiat itself, on the executive order, supposedly within the next few weeks.
Well, leftists are like the Borg. You know, they're like the hive mind or whatever. So I don't know if it's coordinated or what, but just be prepared because over the next few weeks and months, every left-leaning newspaper or network on TV, they're going to start doing hit pieces on Bitcoin.
Well,
haven't they already started?
Yeah. Maybe it's already started. They've been doing this
for a little while now, like, I don't know, a week or months at least.
Years.
Like,
they've been hitting Bitcoin for years.
Yeah, but when this comes out, I think it's going to be really big.
Sure. I feel like they've ramped it up recently with like the environmental aspects of it that they've brought in. They've really started ramping it up on the environment. You know, before they were talking about other stuff, but now it's like, you know, a little bit, but now it's like super over the top kind of stuff.
Well, Bitcoin has survived this constant onslaught for years, and if they ramp it up, it's just going to mean more attention to Bitcoin. Yeah. Okay, bring it on.
Well, they'll use the environment, they'll use all these other excuses, but what it's about is control. You know,
totally.
They don't want average people have it. The government doesn't like competition.
Who knew?
They, you know, these socialists, they say, well, you know, we're for the common man and all this. Look what Bitcoin and all that's doing for little third world countries, little villages and all that. It's really helping them out, but they're not dependent on them. That's why they don't like it. You know, anything that cuts the umbilical cord of, you know, especially common working class people from the government, the socialists are going to fight, man. You know, they want power, so they're going to try their best to destroy Bitcoin. I don't know how they're going to do it, but.
They're not going to. The good news is it's over for them.
Yeah, they can't destroy Bitcoin, but they can make life difficult in a regulated economy where businesses do whatever it is the government tells them to do. And if they do target the Bitcoin exchanges, it's going to become difficult to acquire Bitcoin, a lot more difficult. Like, it's not easy right now. In order to get, you know, through the legitimate quote unquote means, you got to go and jump through a bunch of know your customer hoops. And sometimes they'll just reject you because they don't like your address or they don't like, you know,
I mean,
whatever.
You know, this is true, but I think at the same token, it's not that hard to get set up with accepting cryptocurrencies either.
Sure, if you want to accept them at your business, that's one way to do it. But if you want to, if Bitcoin drops, if there's a huge dip and you say to yourself, okay, that's it, I'm getting in. Well, now you got to figure out how to get in.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's tricky.
It makes it, especially if you're only accepting it, it's hard to, and you know, but you can go and buy a stablecoin with Bitcoin, though, if you're accepting it, though. So it's not like
they'll make it expensive to use, probably. You know, they'll have, you know.
How?
Taxes, fees, I don't know.
I mean they've already done that.
There's already a 37% tax on it when you.
I mean, the thing is, relying on people to pay their taxes, it's probably not the best strategy. I mean, there's already a. I don't know if they would call this a gray market, but like, I mean, when you pay the person who mows your lawn, I mean, are you? You're probably paying them
who
in
reports
cash, right?
That?
Like, or if you tip the waiter, I mean, how much of that do you think is actually getting reported?
A fraction of it,
right?
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I'd like to see these politicians taxes half of them, but it's another story. But
they are gonna make things more difficult on the companies that are essentially the on and the off ramps to cryptocurrency, and that will make life more difficult. It will mean that more direct person to person purchases
will
have to happen.
It'll also incentivizes people to use cryptocurrencies more and more because. Who wants?
You mean not cash out? Keep it just circulating.
Yeah. I mean, why would anybody want to hold dollars, which they're forcing into bank accounts, which are then going to ensure that they get taxed?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they just go with
like
the crypto,
the,
they don't have to pay any of the taxes.
Go ahead, Joe.
I was saying it's kind of like the there are a lot of people, especially younger people, you know, when they see the man's out for something, it's just going to pique their interest in it, and it's I don't think crypto's going anywhere. I think it's the future, but I think the government, man, it's going to, especially the United States government, they're going to do everything they can.
Yeah. That's
because
the government's the past. Like you said, crypto is the future. The state is the past, and you know, they're not going to go away quietly.
And I agree with Joe that a lot of people, I think especially younger people and people on both sides, maybe a little bit more people on the right, are now in the mindset of anytime the government, aka the mass media, comes out hard against something, they're like, oh, I should be interested in this because the government is telling me, or it's not really the government. I mean, it is basically the government, but mass media is telling me to hate it, so I should actually be interested in this.
That's a good point.
That's how I think.
The same people that wanted to force injections into your arm are now telling you to stay away from cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, man. Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate you you calling and sharing your thoughts tonight. Let's go to Maureen calling from Aberdeen, Washington. You're on Free Talk Live.
Hi, I was just wondering why you talk about Bitcoin a lot.
Because it's the future.
You're living in the future.
Because it can take down the state, because it can end the status quo of abusive money, it can take down the central banks, it can take down the huge banking apparatus that we have that abuses so many poor people. And
gives
so
the money
many
to the people, or the power to the people.
Yeah, I think people have to understand that the state impoverishes all of us, right? It doesn't matter whether you're wealthy or you're poor, it impoverishes you. It impoverishes you more than you would otherwise be impoverished by the state if it wasn't for the state, right? So I think that's the big thing. It's not like, you know, maybe if there could be a perfect government, you know, maybe it wouldn't be so bad, but there can't be. And therefore, you know, we're all better off.
It's also something, and Maureen, if you want to hang on to continue the discussion, I'm fine with it. You can. It's also something you can do something about. You can't do anything by voting. You're never going to vote yourself into more freedom at the federal government level, but you can get more freedom in your life by walking away from the state's money. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. Phones open. You can join us here. Number 603-283-6160. 603-283-6160. Here tonight, it's Ian.
It's Bonnie.
And Chris.
And you can join us online anytime you want. Head over to freetalklive.com. Got a lot of features on our website. And one of them is our podcast, RSS feeds. You can go to feeds.freetalklive.com and you'll find some links there. Pop them into whatever podcast player that you want to use, and you will automatically receive the latest episodes of Free Talk Live. Very, very simple. Head over to feeds.freetalklive.com. As we go back to your calls and thoughts, we were sharing with you a fairly detailed piece by Jacobin Magazine, the hard-left socialist rag, which, to be fair, one of his critiques is a pretty solid critique when it comes to Tether, which is a really questionable stablecoin, and a lot of the industry in the exchanges leans on this particular stablecoin. But that doesn't mean that cryptocurrency is a scam. It doesn't mean that there aren't really legitimate, excellent, well-designed cryptos out there.
Humorously, the reason that cryptocurrencies are so reliant on it is the regulations and governments and things, too. So it's kind of...
I don't know about that. I think it was there first. It was the first stablecoin, and that's what got it established.
He's making a good point. He's saying that the reason it has to be relied on so much is because banks not wanting to... I guess it's not really a government thing. Yeah. It's a banks thing, not wanting to
work with
exchanges.
You're saying because the government is... Well, the banks don't want to deal with the exchanges because they don't want the government to come down on them. So ultimately, it is a government-created problem by them squeezing out the market. The on-ramps, basically, making it more difficult to get cash... Turn it into crypto.
Right.
Let's bring Maureen back on the line, though. She was curious, Best, why are we talking about Bitcoin so often when there's so much else in the world to talk about? Is that right, Maureen? What are your thoughts?
I'm just, it's interesting, Bitcoin. I have my partner. He is far left. Mm-hmm. And I'm like on the right side now, but more in the middle.
Okay. And what does your partner think about Bitcoin?
I don't think he hears it.
He doesn't hear it?
He listens to Rachel Maddow.
Ooh,
in Russian TV.
Okay, so he doesn't have any opinion about Bitcoin or cryptocurrency?
I've never asked him. Huh. He's so far left.
Well, Russia might get into the cryptocurrency scene soon.
Could be.
Yeah, but Russia's not really communist anymore. It's more, how would you describe it? It's more...
mixed economy.
No, it's more like it's a mafia. It's more like a mafia
crony
control.
Capitalism.
Just like the U.S. Super crony capitalism, probably.
Just like the U.S.
Yeah.
Here's what
but
I would suggest.
I just said that because she said he watches like RT or whatever.
Here's the thing, Maureen. Yeah. You don't have to buy or get into cryptocurrency to appreciate it. You can look at it from the outside and come to understand why it makes sense, why the decentralized concept is a good idea for money, even if you yourself, because there's some people say, you know what, I'm too old for this. I'm just, you know, I got my gold, I got my silver, I'm done.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you can't appreciate it for its beauty, its effectiveness, and what it can allow the individuals to do. That said, though, if you've got kids or grandkids, it makes for a great, you know, Christmas gift or whatever, or a birthday gift, and your grandkids will think you're like the coolest grandma ever.
Yeah.
So it is worth kind of learning about it when you get the chance. Maureen, thanks for the call tonight. I appreciate it. The number is 603-283-6160. So we're talking about this stablecoin Tether, which apparently 70% of the volume of Bitcoin trades are conducted in Tether, meaning that of all the trades going on in a 24-hour period, from Bitcoin to another crypto versus, you know, and back or whatever, 70% of them involve Tether. That's a lot. Now, as it points out here in this story, we don't know what is true about the reserves that Tether claims to have. They're supposed to have a dollar for every dollar stablecoin that they issue, but they don't.
Or a dollar equivalent.
Well, they've admitted that they have quote-unquote cash equivalents, and only 3% of their reserves is actual cash dollars in a bank account.
Wow.
And so there's more to say about this. He points out, even with these modest claims, or while even these modest claims about their reserves may be a lie, as Tether has never undergone an external audit. And that's a really important point. Like, back in the day, there was this cool thing called the Liberty Dollar, which was a silver-backed warehouse receipt, and they also had actual silver pieces, one-ounce silver pieces. They had, like, half ounces and quarter ounces and things like that, too. But their main piece was this actual piece of paper that was a warehouse receipt, meaning that in some vault with a guard standing out front, right, they have an ounce of silver. For every one of those warehouse receipts, they had an ounce of silver in a bank vault, or not a bank vault, but a privately held vault. And what the Liberty Dollar would do on an, you know, I don't know how often it was, once or twice a year or maybe more often than that, I don't know. But they would hire a third-party independent auditor to go into that vault location with whatever it was that Liberty Dollar would say, we should have this amount of gold or this amount of silver in that vault. So they'd go in with what Liberty Dollar claimed to have, and they'd go and they'd actually look in the vault and say, okay, yep, they've got this amount of silver. Yep, they've got this amount of gold. Okay, we, the third-party independent auditor, we're signing off on this. Boom. Case closed. They've got it.
Did the feds take all that silver?
The feds took it all.
Of course they did. And this is the problem. This is the problem with
centralized
money.
Yeah,
with centralized money. You know, governments can come in and take it. Potentially, yep. Criminals can come in and take it. Even your
You're repeating yourself.
Yeah, even mm-hmm. your... Yeah, I am. Even your bank account is not necessarily safe.
Hell
you know?
No, it's not.
People have this idea that their funds are insured by the federal government. That's actually only partially true. If the bank get, I'm trying to think when that actually comes into play. But basically, like if you get defrauded or something of that nature, your bank doesn't come into play. You know, the government doesn't insure it.
It's only if the bank closes.
Right, right. So. Basically. Your money's not as safe in the government's banks as
you
think.
And even then, they're just going to print it.
Like, yeah,
or,
right.
You know, if the bank gets robbed or they close or whatever, and they can actually honor this, then they're just going to print the
Yeah, they'll print more and it'll become worth less.
So again, the reserves may be a lie. And Tether's terms of service make it clear they do not guarantee the redemption of their tokens for cash. So it's right there. It's not like they're hiding it.
So basically, it's just one big scam.
Should the market suddenly lose faith in Tether and exchanges become unable or unwilling to exchange them one for one with dollars or the respective amount of cryptocurrency, Tether accepts no obligation to use whatever reserves they may or may not have to buy back the Tethers.
It sounds like this author found out that Tether is a scam and wrote an article about how all cryptocurrency is therefore a scam, which is stupid.
And in practice, Tether rarely buys back or, quote, burns their tokens, which means sending the tokens to a receive-only wallet so they can't be circulated. As one would expect if the purpose was simply to provide market liquidity as claimed. If that were the case, we would expect the overall supply of Tether to closely track daily crypto trading volumes. Exchanges would only keep enough Tether on hand to cover trading volume and presumably sell off or redeem excess Tethers for cash when fewer people are actively trading crypto. Instead, their supply has been growing exponentially for years, exploding during crypto bull market runs and continuing straight through years-long downturns. There are now over 78 billion tethers in circulation and rising, about 95% of which was issued since the latest cryptocurrency bull market started in early 2020. There's no conceivable universe in which cryptocurrency exchanges should need an exponentially expanding supply of stablecoins to facilitate daily trading. The explosion in stablecoins and the suspicious timing of market buys outlined in the 2017 paper suggest, as a 2019 class action lawsuit is alleging, that iFinex, which is the parent company of both Tether and the exchange Bitfinex, is printing tethers from thin air and using them to buy up Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies in order to create artificial scarcity and drive prices higher. So if that's true, it's a very interesting theory.
You know, I do have to wonder, though. I mean, let's say, you know, that they're doing it. Why would they do it all at once? I mean, that seems
they
like
haven't done it all at once. They've done it over a period of years, but they're doing it more often in the last 2 years.
Yeah, but I mean, usually when it jumps pretty high, pretty fast. Mm-hmm. So it seems like it would be they would want to do it. They would be buying Bitcoin, you know, at a slower pace so it doesn't get noticed.
Good question. The number here is 603-283-6160. There's more to say here, and your calls and thoughts are welcome. You can bring up whatever's on your mind. Is this all a, you know, house of cards? We're coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live, and phones are open if you want to join the show. The number is 603-283-6160, 603-283-6160. Ian, Bonnie, and Chris in the studio here tonight sharing an attack piece against cryptocurrency, which turned into really an attack against Tether, the stablecoin. Although, honestly, this is a lengthy piece, and we're not even halfway through it. So there's no way we're going to get through this story tonight. But I will post it over at social.freetalklive.com, and you can look at it in detail there. That's social.freetalklive.com. We're going to go back to your calls and thoughts, though. First up, we have Phil calling us from California. Phil, you're listening on the TuneIn app. What's on your mind tonight?
Okay, I just wanted to share an experience I had with a Bitcoin ATM. I think they're the largest Bitcoin ATM company in the United States. Basically what happened was I sold some Litecoin, about $500 worth. It was just to pay. I was going to put my mom on a plane and have her go visit my daughter. And, I was using the Talkatone app and, I lost the number. Talkatone deleted my number and told me to get a new one.
What is Talkatone?
Is that like a pay arena? Sorry.
It's just kind of like a dummy number you can get. It's kind of like Google Voice.
Okay. A throwaway number.
It's a texting.
Okay.
It's a texting app. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So anyways, I sent them the money. I gave them a refund address in case anything went wrong. So I lost my number. So I tried calling this company. And they wouldn't talk to me. They wouldn't refund my money. I sent them the receipt from my wallet. I've sent them all this stuff. So they basically stole my $500.
Wow. Whoa. Okay, so let me see if I'm following this. So a lot of these Bitcoin ATMs or Bitcoin vending machines, they require a phone number or like an ID scan or both, depending on how much you're going to purchase at the machine. And so you're saying you gave this company one of these throwaway phone numbers as your phone number?
Correct. And it was working fine. Actually, the problem was the ATM that I went to go pick up the cash at, it was down. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, granted, I probably could have used an app like Bit Refill or something, so I could have bought a gift card and just paid for the ticket that way, which probably would have been much better off. But because I don't have the phone number anymore, even though I even sent them my ID, I sent them everything. I sent them the wallet, I sent them the text with a verification code, and they said unless I call from that number, and this is supposed to be the most legitimate Bitcoin ATM,
right.
I don't know if I'd call a highly government compliant crypto vending machine, the most trustworthy.
But that's a great point, Chris. These people are doing this. This whatever company. Yeah. Go ahead. You can name them if you want. You can say allegedly.
Yeah, please do so we know who not to use.
CoinCloud.
Okay. I believe they might have a New Hampshire location. CoinCloud. So that's what you're saying you had a bad experience with. And so, of course, bigger is not always better, number one.
Yeah.
But number two, these companies are super compliant. They do everything that they do more than what the government requires them to do as far as, you know your customer and all these requirements, these hoop jumping requirements. And so
that gives them an ability to possibly steal crypto from people. If somebody can't, for whatever reason, comply with KYC... Oh, well, I mean, you're not going to make a fit about it.
This sounds like something more criminal in nature because, yeah. I mean, in theory, they should just refund if they cannot complete their transaction, right? It should be those funds get returned, not that they... the idea of KYC is that you don't complete the transaction, not that you're allowed to then steal the money if somebody doesn't comply with KYC.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
So this doesn't really sound particularly like a KYC problem so much as, or even regulation problem.
It sounds more like a scam. But hold on, the reason this exists is because of Know Your Customer requirements. Is because they require this.
Maybe.
Well, what I was going to say is the problem is not, because if it's under $1,000, they don't require ID. Mm-hmm. So they have a refund address that I gave them in case anything went wrong. But because I don't have the phone number that I originally signed up with, they won't even talk to me.
You can't prove. Prove that you are who you say you are because they don't know who you are.
I have a question for you. Have you asked them what their policy is as far as, because it might just be they automatically refund you if nobody picks up the cash.
Not likely.
No, they told me this is what I was told by one of their people. I talked to a manager and he said, "Well, if we had a customer calling about a transaction that was 2 years old trying to get a refund." And I said, "What's your policy so you don't there's no timeout of these transactions?" Because I figure a legitimate business, if it took too long or the transaction didn't go through over a certain amount of time, whether it's a week or 2 weeks, they'd at least refund it to the address. They have the address. They just took my money and they say we're not responsible, blah blah blah. And I'm like, you're stealing. So the policy is If something happens, you steal the money? No, the money's waiting for you. Right. You just need to call from the phone number.
Cannot get. The phone number is gone.
This sounds like a consumer trade kind of... what is that? Where do those organizations...
You're talking like the Better Business Bureau or something?
No, there's some... I think most states
there's a government agency.
And this sounds like a issue that is not a regulatory banking type of issue. It's a consumer... some sort of like consumer fraud agency type of thing. I'm not saying they're going to do anything for you. I'm just saying that that's what it sounds like. And it sounds like if enough people were to report it, I don't know, maybe somebody might look into it.
They also blocked my number, so I can't even call for my regular number.
Well, I have a question.
Wow. So I kept calling. I just got a bunch of different numbers, and I kept calling.
Oh, my God.
So if anybody wants to just keep calling and ask them if their policy is stealing... Because I've been doing that for the past...
What was your question, Bonnie?
I just wanted to ask the caller, did he try contacting the phone number company and just explain to them why you need that number again, or is it just impossible?
I sent them an email, and I've gotten nothing in response. Mm. And I even went as far as trying to change my phone number, my Verizon number, over to that number, but
I was going to try
to port it in.
Phil, thanks for the call tonight, man. Good luck, and thanks for sharing that story with us. So, the
cloud one is the only one I saw in San Antonio, the only ATM.
CoinCloud?
CoinCloud.
So the lesson here is if you're going to buy, thank you, Phil, if you're going to buy from one of these machines and they require a phone number, you ought to give them your real number, because using one of these throwaways is going to be risky.
Yeah, definitely risky. I think in some respects, this probably was self-inflicted, but at the same time, I think the answer to the best way to deal with these sorts of situations, particularly if you want to have some sort of privacy, is to buy your crypto in cash, from another person if you can.
Yeah, I think it's a bad idea for him to go to any Better Business Bureau, whatever people, because that's just going
to
make them say, oh, look at this issue we need to regulate it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Bonnie. I'm not saying that's the
answer. This is a result of regulation.
I
the reason why they're collecting phone numbers servers is because the government could come knock on their door. If the government comes and knocks on CoinCloud's door and says, we want to see all of the customer info from the month of whatever, and then they have to show it to them, and it's got to have numbers, and it has to have info.
And you're right, Bonnie. The best thing to do is not to do business with this company, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the best way for consumers.
If only there were crypto vending machines run by people who respected your privacy.
I know, right? If only the government didn't exist.
If only they didn't arrest us for that. Just a final thought here from this story, because, again, like I said, we're not even halfway through it.
Yeah.
But he makes an interesting conclusion. He says, at least in this section, Tether has effectively become, this is the central, or the stablecoin. He says it's effectively become the central bank of crypto. Like central banks, they ensure liquidity in the market and even engage in quantitative easing. The practice of central banks buying up financial assets in order to stimulate the economy and stabilize financial markets. The difference is that central banks, at least in theory, he says, operate in the public good and try to maintain healthy levels of inflation.
That's really good. So he's just giving
investment.
Them.
This is, you know, this on one hand, this is like the best argument I've actually heard, I think, from the left. But at the same time, it's created because of the left and the government policies that the left wants to institute. Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a self-serving thing to try and get you to believe that, you know, crypto is bad because it. You know, there's something equivalent being done by a for-profit entity, and the real problem is that the, you know, government caused the problem in the first place.
To summarize the story, he goes on to complain that the government hasn't done enough in the next section, and the final section is entitled "Ban Them All." He wants to make it illegal to sell cryptos on banked exchanges.
How about you just don't use it if you don't like it?
That's the thing.
The
people that don't like crypto hate it, and they want to stop it.
Yeah, they're violent thugs.
They can't. We'll put the full story up over at social.freetalklive.com. Check out Chris on his website, freedomdecrypted.com. He's got his own freedom-oriented tech show on Saturdays, and you can download that at your leisure. freedomdecrypted.com. This has been Free Talk Live. See you tomorrow.